You are listening to ListCast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, leave a comment, or perhaps suggest a top 5 list for us to do on the show, you can drop us a line at listcast5@gmail.com or visit our website at listcast.podomatic.com. Now on with the show. All right, welcome to ListCast. Our show for today is Heroic Moments. Top five heroic moments. Well, I'm Josh.
I'm Justin.
And
I'm still a heroic moment.
Are we starting off? I don't care. You start off.
All right, I'll start off. Okay. My number five...
Yeah, Justin, what is your number five heroic moment? What to you in your mind speaks heroicity? If that is a word.
That would be Vader's redemption from Return of the Jedi.
No! Denied!
Look, I realize...
wait, are you serious? That's your number five? I thought you were kidding.
No, I'm dead serious.
Okay, what's your number five again?
It's wasn't paying attention. Vader's redemption scene at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Didn't that choose this moment?
You talked about it, but I don't think...
For Goosebump moments or something?
Shit, did you?
Yeah, that was in like my... It was like top five that give you goosebumps or something.
Fuck! Well, sorry. I guess that's what we get for growing up with the same movies. I'm bringing it up anyway as my number five for heroic moments. Long story short,
do it.
Luke is getting blasted by the Emperor, and he's going to kill him. Vader's looking between Luke, his son, and the Emperor, basically his, although, you know, we find this out later, his
Your
mentor.
Your feeble powers and... are no match for the power of the dark side. Skills are no match for the power of the dark side.
I wish there was a line from this so I could quote it, but I can't. Anyway, Luke's getting blasted. Vader looks between the two, and you see, even behind his stoic mask, you see him make the conscious choice.
You see him emote.
You see him emote, and he grabs the Emperor, lifts him up, tosses him over into that power chute, and drops as his life force is almost immediately draining away. It's a very short moment. It's almost been building up to that for 6 hours prior to that with episodes 4, 5, and 6. I don't count.
Don't count the
episodes
prequels.
1, 2, and 3.
I noticed because you said 6 hours.
Yeah, so you don't need 1, 2, and 3 to feel Vader's very heroic self-sacrifice. And the fact that it almost happened so quickly is very cool. He seemed perfectly okay hacking away at Luke himself, but when he had to actually stop and step back and watch someone else kill his child, that did something to him internally, and he stopped, stood up, and did something.
Yeah, I'm like, I when I was talking about it in that
shit, sorry, man. I wish I remembered that.
Well, that's what you get for not doing proper research.
It's not like I'm not a part of these. I just didn't remember.
This is like my number one on a list in the past. But anyway.
All right.
Yeah, when you're looking at Vader, when they're switching back and forth between the shots of Luke and Vader, and you're looking at Vader's face, you can see the emotion in it.
That's
even
amazing.
Though it's nothing but a mask.
I know.
You can't
even see his eyes. I know.
You can see the light dancing off his face from the, you know, the Emperor doing his little, you know, wizard show. Very powerful.
Father,
scene.
Please.
and that click, you know, when you see him make that choice in his mind and you see his body shift. He picks up the Emperor. Man, that is a beautiful fucking moment.
I know, the music builds.
That music, man. Oh, fucking John Williams.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
The man's a genius. And, you know,
Where would we be without John Williams? I mean, Jesus Christ.
I can't even hum that music that happens exactly when he picks up the Emperor. It is so...
I can hear it in my head.
Oh, I know. It is so powerful, and it is so beautiful. And it's the theme. I think it's Luke's theme that you've heard throughout the movies, because John Williams very wisely did a theme for the characters and kept it recurring. And when he picks him up, you hear that theme as he's picking him up. And I could be wrong, but I think he actually sort of made that Anakin's theme in the prequels. So I could be wrong about it. I think it starts to resurface at least in episode three.
Too much about the prequels.
Not a lot, but I think it starts to resurface in three. But nevertheless, it's a theme you know, and you know that this almost became the Skywalker theme. And he's become Anakin Skywalker again. Maybe that's why he played it. And Anakin Skywalker, not Darth Vader, picked up the Emperor and killed him. And as you, a couple minutes later, learn, in doing so, killed himself. Because, as I understand it, through the expanded universe explanations, the Emperor was using his powers of the Force to help keep Vader alive. However,
so that's when you start to sound like a nerd, when you talk about the expanded universe.
Well, I'm just saying. Because, actually, in context, the events of Episode 3 make that not make sense. That doesn't make sense that Vader would have died, because the Emperor died, because Vader was just built up into this suit. Anyway, triumphant moment. You know it as well as I do. Let's move on. What's your five?
Ooh, okay. My number five isn't as, epic or good or in a great movie.
If it's heroic, that's all that matters.
It's from a character called Ford Lincoln Mercury.
What's
Postmaster General Ford Lincoln Mercury.
What?
I like this.
You mean
scene.
The black guy, right?
Yeah, Lorenz Tate.
Yeah, Lorenz Tate. Yeah,
I like that cat.
Cool. I like him. I do.
I think he needs to get more work. Anyway, that's at the end of. Well, need I say the title?
Yeah, no, you don't need to tell.
That's at the end of Postman. After.
Which would be at the 2-hour, 58-minute mark.
Yeah, somewhere around
roughly.
There. After Kevin Costner has defeated General Bethlehem, Lorenz Tate, the postmaster for Lincoln Mercury, walks up to Bethlehem. After Kevin Costner has epically said, "There's gonna be peace! No more killing." And then Lorenz Tate, postmaster general for Lincoln Mercury, takes a gun and says, "I evoke Law 8. I wrote it down. Hold on. Sorry. Mercy is for the weak. He's pointing it, you know.
Are you getting your movies mixed up?
That's the Postman.
Isn't that from The Karate Kid? Mercy is for the weak. An enemy shows no mercy. What is the problem, Mr. Lawrence?
Yeah, that's in The Karate Kid, but this is in The Postman.
Just when you said it, that was the bad guy from Karate Kid.
I mean, you're ruining my moment.
Sorry, I'm ruining your
moment. That's the law of eight. That's the eighth law. Mercy is for the weak.
Okay.
You know, they have the tattoo that says eight, the law of eight, the holdest.
I really don't remember.
Well, anyway. The heroic moment is when he's pointing the gun at Bethlehem and says, "I evoke law 8. Mercy is for the weak."
Does he really sound like Mr. T saying that?
I pity the fool. I'm trying to sound
weak.
Like Lorenz. Okay, sorry.
You don't sound like Lorenz Tate at all.
Sorry.
He sounds like a well-educated white guy.
I don't know why. I'm just trying to get into the scene.
It doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to kill each other. Law 3. Mercy is for the weak. 4. Don't. Law 8. There's only one penalty, and that penalty is death.
He is not worth it.
I'm the head of the clan now! There are gonna be new laws! Law 1! No more killing. There's gonna be peace!
Yes. 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 Yes.
about it, Ford Lincoln Mercury? Be a leader, Ford.
Law 8. Live and let live.
He points the gun and says instead something like, in this regard, Law 9. I'm doing Mr. T again. Live and let live. And he doesn't shoot him. To me, that is a heroic moment.
And does not shoot him.
He does not shoot him.
Right.
To me, I thought that was a heroic moment. It's not a very strong moment. That's why it's my number 5. I just like the way Ford Lincoln Mercury says it. And I have to say Ford Lincoln Mercury.
Mercy is for the weak.
The way he says, live and let live.
An enemy knows no mercy.
Okay, don't mix up the Karate Kid with this. This isn't the Karate Kid. This isn't the Cobra Kai.
What is the problem, Mr. Bethlehem?
I just like the way he says it. To me, that's a heroic moment.
All right. Fair enough. I know you have a... I enjoy the movie, too.
Apparently, I have a bigger affection for the Postman.
You have a bigger affection for it than I do. I do like it, but as you said in one of our previous episodes, I will find any excuse to talk about Superman. You seem to drift towards the Postman quite a bit.
We drifted towards it once.
No,
I think I brought it up in another list.
Yeah, oh, it's definitely come up in another list. I think we've talked about it at least twice.
I like the Postman.
I'm just saying.
I mean, it's not Waterworld, for Christ's sake.
I wish I could remember this specific scene you're talking about. I really don't. I mean, I remember the generals of the movie.
You don't remember the scene I'm talking about?
I don't remember that scene, no.
At the end of the movie.
I was here a minute ago when you described it. I don't remember specifically that moment of the movie. I do not. It didn't stick out enough in my head to kind of gel.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So where are we now?
You're on your number 4.
All right, my number 4 is... I wish I could... say, you know, it's this scene, but it's the scene in RoboCop when RoboCop busts the cocaine deal going on with Clarence Boddicker and a couple other guys. The music piece that plays over that scene is called Rock Shop. Rock being rock cocaine. And
okay,
it's Clarence Boddicker and his goons have met up with this nameless guy and his goons. They've met in a warehouse.
I know what scene you're talking about.
They're leaning over to the table talking, making threats at each other, and then all of a sudden, boom, boom, and they look at the door, and the door busts down, and there is RoboCop standing triumphantly at the door, and everybody panics and starts running, and he just walks in there, guns blaze, and doesn't talk. He's not interested in talking. Someone takes a shot at him. The music starts playing. It's more about the music than anything. The scene itself, the actual action of the scene, actually goes rather quickly. I loved it. He very methodically works his way through this room, taking people out. It's a part in the movie when RoboCop and Alex J. Murphy have kind of finally hit their pinnacle. It's like he's accepted who he is, and he is RoboCop now. He's not just Alex J. Murphy. He's RoboCop, and he walks through that door, blasting away, making really sweet moves, things like that. Also, cutting between all of the other guys shooting at him, and Clarence Boddicker, who is very carefully watching what's going on, and taking very careful aim at him. So, the scene starts big with him taking on everybody, to ultimately culminating between RoboCop and Boddicker himself. But, it's more... The music for that scene really sells me. It's so...
filled with redemption?
Not redemption. Redemption's not the word I'm looking for. It's just... it's so action-adventure, and it's the hero coming in to save the day. And I don't know how to describe it. It always gets me juiced up watching the scene, especially when I hear the music really, really loud coming from it.
We'll be right back.
I love the moment. It is pure good versus evil in that, you know, minute that this scene takes place in. I just love it. Love it. Just love it. Clearly you don't, I can see by the look on your face, you don't really remember it specifically.
I know what scene you're talking about. Okay. I don't know. It didn't seem like much of a heroic moment to me because there was...
Not like he was saving anyone or something like that?
Yeah, and there was nothing at stake for him. Yeah, he was redeeming himself. He was coming back. He was becoming more Murphy than RoboCop. There was no threat to his life ever. He just came in there and owned that place.
Yeah.
There was no stopping him. He was a fucking train barreling down the tracks.
Exactly. It's like he finally got his direction.
So, well, to me, it just seemed unless there was a threat to his life or something. Yeah, I don't know. It's a cool moment. Don't get me wrong. But I just...
The music to me spoke it in a language that I really can't give words to. The theme, Robo's theme, had been introduced a couple of times in the movie up to this point, but played in a different way. And when it finally... Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, it's that theme. But he orchestrated it differently in this scene. It's the RoboCop theme, but it's played bigger, and it's played with a smile, for lack of a better explanation. And you feel that when you're watching it. And to me, it's... if that movie's on in the background or whatever, I will always stop what I'm doing to watch that part. For the music alone, but the scene itself... all comes together. I just love it. All right, whatever. I'm done. What's your four?
Sorry, I didn't expect something from RoboCop. It kind of just threw me off.
Well, I was trying to think outside of the box here. But nevertheless, come on, give me your four.
My number four, I pick every moment ever done, every line ever spoken, ever uttered from every Superman film ever made. Fuck you! Everything from Superman. I'm kidding.
Asshole.
I know you got something from Superman on your list.
Don't be so sure. You don't know.
Yeah, you do.
You don't know nothing.
My number four is from Always. Always from 1989, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Sure. Are you talking about the scene where he dies?
Yeah. Okay. The scene, I wrote it down here. Richard Dreyfuss plays a character named Pete, saves Al, played by John Goodman.
Sure.
You know, they're both firefighters fighting forest fires, and I don't know what the term is. They fly the planes.
They fly the water planes, yeah.
Yeah, they drop, like, whatever.
Yeah, they're water? Like hydro firefighters something like or something that. Yeah. Like that, yeah.
And John Goodman's engine has caught on fire. So Richard Dreyfuss comes in and drops his water load, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what it is.
Drops his
it's
load.
It's not water. It's not. It's like...
I get it. He drops his fire retardant material.
Yes, his fire retardant material. His FRM on the engine of John Goodman and saves his plane.
Right.
And he flies over, pulls up, you know, side by side with his plane. They look at each other and they share a moment and you realize he just saved his life. But unbeknownst to Richard Dreyfuss, his plane has caught on fire while saving John Goodman. And there's a brief exchange when they look at each other when they realize, oh shit, my plane's on fire now. And then his plane fucking disintegrates. It blows up.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't intend to self-sacrifice himself.
Right.
But he did die. And that's how he becomes the ghost, which he will be throughout the rest of the film.
Right.
Unless you lighten up, you're not going to be able to pull out of that dive!
Hey, Pete, this ain't a dogfight, man!
Pete, boss! That dive is way too steep! Way too steep! Pull up out of there! Pete, you're too heavy, man! You can't pull up! Get up out of there! Pete!
Now! Oh, baby, you're the greatest!
Pull up,
Yes! He made it!
Oh, that lucky son of a bitch.
I know it's not as good as RoboCop, but it's
I think it's a great moment.
I love it.
The scene itself is very beautifully done because you don't see it coming. He smiles at John Goodman, and it's a smile.
He smiles as he looks at Goodman, and then he looks over to his engine. It's kind of a double take.
Well, yeah. Still though, the close up is this smile that he does, and this smile is why Richard Dreyfuss is regarded as an excellent actor. He conveyed satisfaction in what he's already done. He conveyed fear. He conveyed almost a giddy sense of adventure. Almost, it's a beautiful moment. But I agree, it's interesting because he didn't intentionally self-sacrifice himself. It happened by accident.
He
would have done it anyway.
Yeah, but before that moment takes place in the film, Richard Dreyfuss, Pete, is developed as a risk taker, kind of the maverick of the group. So you would expect him to do something like that.
Maverick!
Yeah, right. You would expect him to do something like that, which
sure.
He does. Well, I thought it was kind of a cool choice because it takes place in the beginning of the movie, but it also takes place in a movie that a lot of people don't remember much.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I never thought of it, because I wouldn't have associated
it's kind
a
of a lost
moment with a
film by Spielberg.
It is, which is a shame because it's really good.
It's a really good flick.
It's a remake, but
yeah, right. Yeah. By a guy named Joe.
A guy named Joe.
Yeah, not a lot of people talk about Always anymore. But
that's a shame.
You know, 1941 gets talked about because it's supposed to be his worst movie.
Sure.
But Always is kind of like caught somewhere.
I think it just disappeared.
In the Phantom Zone.
No one really
zone,
knew.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
Got lost.
Phantom Zone. Superman rules.
Right.
All right. Are we on to my number three?
Yeah.
My number three is from Iron Man. Specifically the scene where Robert Downey Jr. escapes from the capture of the Iraqi
cool.
terrorists. If they were Iraqi, Iran, what, I don't know what they are.
They're all the same to me.
I think that scene, I think the whole movie, particularly up to that point, is really good. Sure. I enjoy the whole movie anyway, but that first 20-30 minutes, I think, was really, really good. What makes his, you know, busting out so dramatic is that they did spend 20 minutes making you feel for his plight and for the guy that he was with.
Right. You know, when I first saw this, you know, I saw it long after everyone had hyped about it, and I was like, yeah, I can't be that good.
So did I.
But I really liked it. It was a really good flick.
It was, particularly that opening bit.
And that opening, yeah. After I saw that opening bit,
I was like, whatever comes
after is going to be good. Robert Downey Jr. had me sold.
Exactly, because he did so much in that 20 minutes that you know whatever happens is going to be okay. That one guy gets shot and sacrifices himself, really. And Downey gets into that suit, and you feel genuine threat for his life because it's unstable. He doesn't really know what he's doing. You feel exhilarated because it's big, it's machinery, it's powerful. You get a sense of comedy from it because he's still learning. It's almost like he's a big, dumb Lenny, you know, walking around not knowing his own strength. Fantastic. Fantastic. And I dare say, you know, culminates when he flies off and lands in the desert. Excellent scene. I don't want to, it's not redemption. I don't know what you can call it. It's
ingenuity overcoming the obstacles.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
You know,
you feel like he earned it.
Yeah.
You feel like he earned it, and you as the audience feel like you've earned thrill that we're getting now.
You know, it's a guy using his mind, his skills, mm-hmm. to overcome a problem, and he does.
Yeah.
And his victory is fucking absolute. He rolls out there and kicks ass.
They did a very good job of making you feel very hostile towards his keepers without making them seem too two-dimensional. You really felt like whatever they got, they had coming to them. I think the scene's great. So I'm glad we agree on something.
Oh, well, yeah, at least that's one thing.
What's your three?
My number three is from Deep Impact. Well, the movie is so-so. It's an alright film. Compared to Armageddon.
Yeah, it's better Armageddon. Yeah.
Well, yeah, compared to Armageddon, this movie is fucking awesome. You know?
Right.
It's the, you know, I don't know what you would call it. It's like the thinking man's Armageddon, you want to call it. There's a scene at the end when the astronauts inside the shuttle that they have crafted has failed in their mission. They haven't been able to drill properly. They haven't been able to set off their explosives. Everything has just gone wrong. It hadn't worked.
Right.
Their mission was a complete failure. What they had done was is they had split the asteroid in half, basically. Mm-hmm. A large piece and a smaller piece, right? You know, the astronauts, knowing that we failed, we came up here, we didn't do what we thought, they're like, let's just go home. And, you know, Robert Duvall, who's one of the astronauts, is trying to figure out a way to salvage the situation. And, well, it's the way the scene is played out.
Right.
He's talking to the rest of the crew, and he mentions, you know, we'll fly in and we'll detonate the rest of our payload. And one of the other actors says, well, okay, if we do that, how will we get out? And another character chimes in and says, we don't.
Could I bother everyone for a minute? Let's take a look at the big one. Now, the outgassing has created a vent a half a mile wide and at least 2 miles deep. Comet gets closer to sun melts ice turns to steam, we get a big hole. Okay? So, how many nukes we have left in the back?
Four.
Okay, if we can get the remaining bombs in that vent, there shouldn't be anything left of that comet bigger than a suitcase. Now, we can't do anything about the little one, but, you know, it just might give them a chance. Now, without the Army codes, we're going to have to wait to set the bomb timers until we get closer to Earth to raise Houston.
We may not have enough life support left to get back into the cargo bay for the nukes, much less to work down on the comet.
We sure as hell don't have enough propellant left in the Messiah to maneuver with. How are we supposed to get back off the surface once we've gone down there?
We don't.
And then everyone realizes, okay, we're just going to fly in. We're not coming back out. We're going to blow up this asteroid and we're going to die.
Right.
The way that moment is handled, you know, they all call home. They all say goodbye to the loved ones. Not as cheesy as it may sound.
Right.
It
does play well.
It was actually done very well.
Yeah, it's not like the image of Liv Tyler with the huge screen.
It's not like Armageddon where he's like, you know, it's not Bruce Willis on the asteroid with his finger on the button. We win this time.
Not only that, but you know, there's that moment from the trailer where you see Liv Tyler touching the screen. The screen's like 10 feet tall. I know it's a trailer moment.
Yeah, and the Aerosmith song, nothing like that. And they're all very
calm. It's actually sad because the one guy's blind. And he's talking to
his daughter.
Yes, that
is an excellent moment. I'm glad you brought that up. One of the characters has been blinded. His wife and child on the view screen don't know this.
Right.
So one of the other characters is describing what he's looking at. You think it would be cheesy and melodramatic, but it's not.
My sense memory doesn't tell me that it was overplayed with like this extremely strong patriotic heroic music.
Yeah.
It was more played like matter-of-factly.
I don't think
the music that is.
When I think about that scene, I don't think about the music at all. I think
no,
about
because
the,
it didn't oversell.
No,
it.
I think about the emotions
exactly,
involved.
And that to its credit.
Yeah,
you know, it did that. Yeah, good choice, man. Good choice.
Well, I'm glad you remember that.
Of course, it's a great movie. Absolutely.
Yeah, good
stuff. It was about the people, not about the, you know, effects.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my number two is the stairwell fight from Casino Royale.
Stairwell fight?
When they are already at the...
Is this with the African dudes?
Yeah, with the two or three African guys.
Okay.
From start to finish, and when I say start, they are in the elevator, and the ending being when they ultimately end up in the shower. It starts, they're in the elevator, and I forget why, but something prompts him to pull his gun out. And he gets his gun out and kind of gets it ready. Gets it in the ready. They go walking down the hall, and they hear someone getting in a fight, someone being beaten up, something's wrong. And he grabs her, Eva Green, pulls her to a corner and starts pretending like he's kissing her to distract from these two big black bodyguards that have come out. They know what's going on instantly, and they start taking shots at him. They go for a run, end up in the stairwell. Guns get knocked away right away, so it becomes a fist fight. Eva Green is slowly trying to get away and help in what limited way she can. As he's having a bare-knuckle, brutal fist fight with these two goons, working his way down this stairwell, knocks one out of the picture, I guess, relatively quickly, and then continues to fight the other guy until finally, I think he knocks him over the edge and he falls to his death. This guy, I think he goes with him, actually. Eva Green runs down, finds that Bond is still alive and has successfully killed these two guys. This is the first time that she, as a character, has ever seen this sort of thing. She's an accountant, and she's just been thrust very violently into his very violent world. She's extremely shaken. He is very, very calm. He's covered in blood. So is she at this point, because she's touching things. I find it heroic, because the guns were knocked away. This isn't a overblown gunfight. This is a mano-a-mano fist fight. And it is as much about protecting himself as it is about protecting her, who he has become enamored with and is very protective of at this point. He just, again, it's good against evil. He just takes these guys out with wits, with fists, and with good old-fashioned skill. And he gives her instructions to get rid of the bodies. Cut to a minute or two later, he goes, finds his way back to the hotel room because he's told her to go there, goes in the room, he sees a glass knocked over and cracked, and you see this look of suspicion on his face, and he thinks, uh-oh, you know, they followed her here or something like that, and he goes to the bathroom, he hears the shower, finds her in there, sitting inside, you know, this luxurious shower, sitting down fully clothed, crying, just broken down, the water pouring on her, probably hot water because she's probably, you know, cold from fear. And he walks in there also fully clothed, sit next to her, loosens his bow tie, puts his arm around her, and just hold her. And so from start to finish, I think it is so moving. There's that awesome guy moment in the stairwell when they're fighting, followed by an extremely tender, also very heroic moment where he just holds her because he recognizes what just happened was huge for her. Kind of a daily thing for him, as we're starting to figure out. He can't seem to go long without whacking somebody. Part of this heroic feel I got from this was the very real nature that this fight took on. So many of these Bond movies, as time goes on, their fight scenes get so elaborate that there's almost no tension. This feels real. You feel their punches, you feel the hurt inflicted by them, they bleed. I love it. I think it's extremely heroic. I want to be James Bond watching that movie.
Oh, I can tell by your explanation of that scene.
Sorry if that I couldn't was a help long-winded.
But just, no, I couldn't help but just sit and listen to you, because I, you know, you were explaining it very well, but I don't remember much about that scene other than how it ends with them in the shower.
Right.
I remember that being a very
poignant moment.
There's a good word. The way they ended the way they ended that scene. I remember how it started and how it ended, but that middle part where you're talking about in the stairwell,
right.
I was completely blanked on. But I couldn't remember anything.
It had the same feel of realism in that fight that the fight at the end of GoldenEye did, mm-hmm. where Bond and Trevelyan are fighting, and it's just there's no music. It is just raw fisticuffs. It had that same. It just felt real. I mean, the whole movie did that very well. Where you felt the realism of the action.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's noted for. Basically.
But it was just the random nature of this. They weren't going after him at all. He just unfortunately ended up right in their midst. It's almost like it's like a man being a man kind of a thing. You know, just it speaks to that primal nature inside of me, and I would assume of many males watching it. And then, you know, touched off by that beautiful moment in the shower. It's beautiful.
All right.
You're number one or two?
I'm a number 2.
Okay.
Is from Places in the Heart.
All right.
And you're like, what the hell is he choosing from that movie? It's a scene between, it starts off with Malkovich playing a character named Mr. Will,
mm-hmm.
and Danny Glover playing a character named Mose.
Right. Moses, isn't it, though? They just call him
Mose. Yeah, they just call him Mose.
Yeah.
Mr. Will and Mose are sitting down at night, you know, in the kitchen table, and they're chatting, and Mr. Will is, you know, like, he says, Mose, there's somebody outside. He's like, okay, I'm sure it's nothing. I'll go check on it. You know, you can tell right now that there's something's going on outside isn't right. So Danny Glover goes outside, and, you know, for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, Mr. Will is blind, so mm-hmm. very acute sense of hearing.
Well, maybe I wasn't paying attention. You have pointed out that Moses is black.
I haven't pointed that out.
Yeah, I dare say that's probably relevant.
Danny Glover is a black man in, like, 1930s...
in the South.
South. So, yeah, that's going to come into play very quick here.
Not a good combination.
Yeah, so Mr. Will is... It stays on Mr. Will, and you hear a commotion outside going on. Malkovich goes out, Mr. Will goes out, and the KKK are there in their shrouds and their masks and right. surrounded Danny Glover. And so they start beating him up. You know, you think, okay, who's going to save him now? Because there's nobody else home.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going on, and then all of a sudden, Malkovich comes out with a gun. He knows where the gun in the house is, finds it, comes out, and you think, well, he's a blind guy. He's a blind guy. What can he do?
And they know that too, don't they?
They know that.
Yeah.
They all know him.
Yeah.
Since, you know, he's deaf, you know, I mean, he's blind. He knows only by his ears, so he's like, okay, I know who you are. Why are you guys doing this? He doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
Mose? Keep out of this, Mr. Will. This ain't none of your business.
You move away from him right now.
Put that thing away, Mr. Will, before you hurt somebody. God damn!
Now. Mose?
Hold it, Mr. Will. We don't have any quarrel with you.
Mr. Thompson, why are you doing this to him?
You got the wrong man, Mr. Will. I ain't Thompson.
That's Mr. Thompson. I've been selling him brooms for years. Sure as you're Mr. Shaw. And that's Mr. Simmons over there by the barn.
All right, boys, it's us going home.
All right, nigger. But I ain't through with you yet.
And after that, you know, they let him go, and the scene pretty much just ends on Danny Glover just crouched to the ground, crying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they say,
I remember that. I remember the sound of him crying.
Yeah, he's, yeah. You know, one of the members of the KKK comes up and says, "We ain't through with you yet, boy."
Right.
You know, very threatening, and he's just, you know, completely destroyed at that moment. Because
they broke him.
They did break him, because he, you know, he'd been fighting against that racism throughout the whole movie, and it's pretty much kind of building up to let him down.
Yeah.
Cause
that's how his character leaves the movie. He leaves a broken man. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want him to leave, but he has no choice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at this point in the movie, Mr. Will and Mose had acclimated into this family.
Right.
They'd become part of the family. They created this unit, a very bizarre
kind
of unit, had come together and come through this very difficult situation together in a place that normally wouldn't allow that to happen. And they'd become like a family. It's just the way that
No, I get it.
Malkovich handled that situation.
Oh, yeah.
And exposed them for who they were.
Well, not only that, he put himself in
harm's way. Yeah.
Yeah, he put himself in harm's way to protect Mose.
Well, you know, it's because of the way Malkovich is introduced. He is not a likable character. He is introduced very begrudgingly. He does not want to be there.
Right.
He's like, leave me alone, and I'll leave you alone. Stay out of my way.
Yeah, he doesn't want... He's not interested in having relationships with people.
And the furthest thing from your mind is that he's going to do anything to help anybody other than himself.
Right.
And in the end, he...
He risks...
He does something for somebody who he's befriended throughout this experience he's had.
Okay, good choice. Good choice. Oh, all right.
What is this, your number?
This is my number one.
Okay.
All right. Before I say it, just don't. I'm just going to ask you not to.
And I'll holding me? Who's holding you? Is that it?
It is, isn't it? I was going to do the scene from Superman 1 where the helicopter saved. But...
And you were looking at me with that blank expression when I said every moment from Superman.
I know.
Like I was fucking crazy.
But I'm going to use the end scene from Superman 2.
You'll admit that I was right.
Yes, all right? I'm using the end scene from Superman 2. Specifically the moment. And it's the moment.
You mean the...
Let me say.
Swear
it.
Eternal...
Let me build up to it.
All right.
Superman has had a giant confrontational battle with the three supervillains from Krypton in Metropolis. He lost. He was overpowered.
Superman fled.
I don't believe you. Yes. Anyway, he fled to the Fortress of Solitude, where we've already learned there is a chamber in there that will take his powers away. He got his powers back through use of the crystal, yada, yada, yada. But we know, as the viewing audience, that this chamber, if you go into it, it will take your Kryptonian superpowers away. You will become mortal.
No. Don't go in there, General. You go in there, it'll take away your powers. You poisonous snake.
So.
Sorry.
The villains take Lois and fly to the Fortress of Solitude with Lex Luthor because he's also been there. He's telling them where to go. Superman emerges. They have a little fight a little bit. Superman is, by threat of hurting Lois, is made to come out and show himself, which he does. Luthor, knowing the capabilities of the Fortress, tells General Zod that, yes, this chamber will take away your powers. Mm-hmm. Superman is fully aware that Lex Luthor knows this, but plays along and does exactly what you just said. Luthor, you poisonous snake! And General Zod orders Superman, Kal-El, into the chamber to take his powers away. Because General Zod is not the least bit interested in beating Superman on even terms. So, Superman goes into the chamber, the lights go on, all the red lights are on the outside, Superman's going through the motions of... And
I wish this was a video podcast so you could see the reaction of you doing that.
Superman emerges.
Right.
He's sunken down. He's head hanging low. Stands before Zod. Zod puts his hand out. Take my hand and smear it with eternal loyalty to Zod.
Take my hand and swear eternal loyalty to Zod.
Kal-El goes to his knee, takes Zod's hand in his, and we, the audience, really don't know what's going on here. We feel that Superman has lost his powers because we've seen this happen before when he goes into this chamber. He starts to squeeze his hand like he's squeezing it to offer him...
Mm-hmm.
You know,
his loyalty.
His loyalty. And then you start to hear the crushing sound. Superman is crushing his hand. They cut to Zod's face. And Superman tosses his broken hand away, grabs him by the clothes at his chest, picks him up over his head. The Superman music triumphantly plays. Tosses tosses Zod across the room. Music is blaring at this point. Lois whips around, socks the girl, knocks her down off into the trenches of the fortress. Mm-hmm. Non jumps, has no powers because, guess what? The machine was reversed and was taking away everyone's power outside of the box. So inside the little chamber, Superman was, of course, safe. We know this because Lex Luthor is good enough to explain this by going, oh, he switched it. He was safe in there. Well, they were out here. Yeah, so it was just a great, triumphant moment. And what I really enjoy about it is that although Superman did crush his hand and throw him across the room, his defeat of the supervillains was not really in his super strength. It was in his ingenuity. He got away and he thought, because it was 3-1 and equally powered. He was overpowered. There's no way to deny that. And he could not beat them on a physical sense. He had to beat them with his mind. So he used this chamber, something he knew Lex Luthor knew about, and used that to his advantage. He played the situation, and just that moment where he literally lifts Zod above his head.
Yeah, I know what you're... I mean, I know what moment you're talking about.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I know how the music starts.
It is just amazing. You know, that horn, sure. The horn starts going, and you get chills, you get goosebumps when you see Superman holds Zod above his head and he shakes his head in that, you know, smirky way going, you just don't know who I am, do you? And tosses him across the room. It is, I think, on par with the helicopter rescue scene. You have to experience Superman up until that point, but you feel that same exhilaration when it happens. And it happens just as quick. The helicopter scene is not long. No. Not really. Not when the actual action happens. It gives me goosebumps. Makes me smile every single time. Look, I knew you were going to give me shit because it was Superman. But fuck you. It's a great moment. It is a moment that cannot exist.
I just feel like an asshole now.
Stay
because
with me.
You know, because I ruined the helicopter scene.
Well, I didn't do the helicopter scene.
Oh, so you intentionally strayed away from that?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it was so obvious. You know, I decided to go with Superman.
Oh, I thought that I had ruined that for you, so I felt like an asshole.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I knew you were probably going to take a shot at me, you know, going into this. But,
yeah.
You know, the fact is that this is a genuine film moment. This is a moment that could not exist in the written word, not the same way, nor could it exist in the comics in exactly the same way. Because it is the meld of music, editing, performance, and just magic can only exist in film. And it was just a beautiful moment. All right, I'm done. Let's hear your number one. Unless you'd like to, I'd love to hear if you have anything to say about it.
It's cool. All
right, what's your number one?
I like it.
All right.
I don't have the fascination with Superman that you do.
Yes, I know.
I know the scene back to front, mm-hmm. just like you do. I was picturing it in my head as you were describing it.
Sure.
You know, but...
All right, enough. Go ahead.
It doesn't raise the goosebumps on my skin like it does for you.
Okay. What's your number one?
Well, this is actually quite ironic, and I feel like a dickhead. Because
did you do a superhero moment?
My number one is actually from Superman 3, when Richard Pryor is talking to the villain, and he ends up skiing off the building. I'm kidding.
All right.
I'm kidding.
You actually had me for a second there, but you can just suck my dick, you piece of shit. Whatever you have better be fucking epic. So
I guess it's going to seem like small potatoes compared to Superman. It's from the Grand Canyon.
With Kevin Kline?
Yeah, 1991, written and directed by Lawrence Kasdan.
Heroic? Okay, yeah, I'm...
I have it written down here. Simon saves Mac.
Yeah. Right.
Simon, played by Danny Glover, saves Mac, played by Kevin Kline, from like the hoodlums in the bad part of L.A.
Sounds like you got a Danny Glover fetish going on in this one.
Yeah, I know I have another Glover thing here, I know.
Totally but, different performances, though, to his
yeah,
credit.
Yeah, but I love this moment. It's one of my favorite moments.
It's a very uncomfortable scene to watch.
Yeah, Kevin Kline is, you know, white dude driving in the bad part of
L.A. Well-to-do white dude.
Wealthy. Well-to-do white guy driving in the bad part of L.A. He gets kind of turned around, lost or whatever. His car breaks down in the bad part of Los Angeles. And you're like, oh, and he's like, oh man, what the fuck? Oh, this sucks. I'm screwed. As this is happening, he notices these gangsters.
Well, he's called the tow truck at this point.
Well, before he even calls the tow truck, you know, he notices that these gangster thugs drive in playing their rap music or following him. Mm. So then his car breaks down. He's like, fuck. And he sees him again. He's like, shit, this is bad.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, who's going to save this guy now? He's completely fucked. You know, they pretty much jump him. You know, these four black dudes, you know.
But they haven't... I think that's deceptive. When you say they jump him, they haven't actually physically assaulted him
yet. No, they don't physically assault him. No,
they
don't.
But they are clearly getting ready.
They're very menacing, yes. Is what... They're playing nice.
That's exactly
in a very sarcastic
they're
tone.
They're menacing him.
Yeah. In a very sarcastic way, playing nice. Yeah. Fucking with him.
Yeah.
Because they know they have the upper
hand. Like, hey, sir, what can we do for you? You having a problem here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're coming in there to rip him off, to take his car, or maybe even kill him.
And very probably kill him.
He knows that. They know that. And they're playing off his fear just to fuck with him. They're being assholes.
Yeah.
And
it's
hard to watch because you know they're doing it for their own pleasure.
Yeah.
Just to see him squirm.
Hey man, you need some help here? This is a nice car, mister. This one of them new Jap cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need some help. Oh yeah, it is a Jap car.
Thanks. No, I've already called for the tow truck and the police.
You called the police? What? On that phone there, you called all those people? Who else you call your mama?
He been busy, man.
I see. You know, this is a nice car, mister. I could use me a car with a phone in it. Maybe you want to get a ride somewhere or something. You want a jump start or something?
Yeah, man. How about a jump start?
Ooh, he nervous, y'all. What you so nervous about, man?
Maybe he carrying, Jim. Maybe he's scared we gonna bust him.
Bust his ass.
Okay, Grandma, whatever, baby.
Why don't you get out of the car, mister? You want me to have Jimmy take you out of there? Or how about this? Do you ever want to get out of that car again?
Look, what do you want? You want my wallet? You want my watch? It's a shitty watch. You're welcome to it.
What I want is you get out of the car.
Come on, let's get this shit over with.
Now, motherfucker.
Along comes Danny Glover in his tow truck. Mm-hmm. Danny Glover, who comes in, pays no attention to these gangsters. Starts hooking up the car, completely ignores them. The ringleader of the gang comes up to him. He's like, Are you dissing me, man? Are you dissing me?
You dissing me, man?
You bet he is. You saying it now, man?
Hey, man, that's right. That's what he's doing.
Is that right? You dissing me?
No, I'm not. Nothing like it. I'm doing the job here, fella. This is how I make my living. I just ride out there and do the job. I want it to go as smooth as it can be. I don't like to be any harder than it already is. You want to make sure you're neutral and the parking brake is off?
That's bullshit, man. He talking bullshit.
Yeah, man, what's going down? This is fucked up.
Get in the truck, you ride up with me. Are you the one I'm talking to?
Hey, we all decide what goes down. So don't fly that shit.
Yeah, man, fuck you.
Am I talking to the right man? That's what I thought. Look, I gotta ask you a favor. I gotta ask you to let me go my way here. Now, this truck is my responsibility. Now that the car's hooked up to it, I'm responsible for that, too. Any shit comes down now is my ass. You follow me?
Do you think I'm stupid? Just answer me that first, and then we can talk.
Look, I don't know nothing about you. You don't know nothing about me. I don't know if you're stupid or some kind of genius. But I do know this. I gotta get out of here, and you got the gun. So I'm asking you a favor for the second time. Let me go my way here.
I'm gonna grant you that favor. And I'm gonna expect you to remember this if we ever meet again. Yeah. But first, you gotta answer one more thing for me, and you gotta tell me the truth. Are you asking me a favor as a sign of respect? Or are you asking me a favor because I got the gun?
Man, the world ain't supposed to work like this. I mean, maybe you don't know that, but this ain't the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be able to do my job without asking you if I can. That dude is supposed to be able to wait with his car without you ripping him off. Everything's supposed to be different than what it is.
So what's your answer?
You don't have the gun. We ain't having this conversation.
That's what I thought. No gun, no respect. That's why I always got the gun.
Not through any physical action, Danny Glover saves Kevin Kline.
Right.
Manages to get out of that situation when you think, how the hell could have, you know, could that have happened?
That's a good scene.
I love that scene. I don't know why or what, but every snippet of dialogue, I love. Mm-hmm. I'll just listen to the audio. I just love it.
I'm guessing
you like that scene as well.
I like the scene. I don't like to watch it because how uncomfortable it makes me feel.
Yeah, because you let me talk about it for a long time. So I'm
no, you've kind of, you know, you sucked me into it. And, you know,
I don't think I was describing it very well.
I've described that scene to people before, and I've taken the exact amount of time you did, and because you have to really explain it to feel it, and you know, I like you. I loved that what he did. He did without a weapon. He did with words. He did without boasting any sort of physical prowess. It was all in demeanor.
All right. Well, I'm glad you had a connection to that scene. I wasn't sure if you were going to or not.
Yeah, good movie. Good scene.
Another movie that kind of has slipped through the cracks, not talked about much these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
People are more apt to talk about Crash. Than this movie, which is very similar but much better. But
yeah.
Anyway, I think that's it for us.
I think that's it.
Well, do you have any alternatives?
I have no alternates, and I'm not. I think we should probably stay away because I think we're probably coming in long.
Well, I had one.
All right, what is it?
From Tron.
Tron. Tron.
At the end of the movie, when Flynn throws himself into the stream. That's why I was an alternate.
All right, that said, I'm Dustin.
I'm Josh. It's been fun. All right, see you later.
Bye-bye.